Annalise or Isaiah?
This is Isaiah. Well,
hey, Isaiah. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Everything go okay for you to log on?
Yep.
Okay, great. I'm going to show my screen here in a moment, and then we'll get started here in about 10 minutes. As people jump on and beep in, I'll kind of make some announcements, and then I'll do a quick introduction, and I'll hand it over to you and Annalise.
Okay, sounds good.
Good afternoon to those of you that are just joining us this afternoon for the first year tips and advice webinar. We'll get started here in about 7 or 8 minutes. If you're joining online, you should be able to see a screen right now that says National Teach Ag Campaign. If you're having any issues, I'll certainly try to troubleshoot them, but I can't guarantee that we'll be able to do that. Until then, you can just hang out and relax and get used to hearing me say this very same message over the next few minutes as people jump on and off. Good afternoon to those of you that are joining us this afternoon for the first year tips and advice webinar. We're going to get started here right around 4 o'clock Eastern time, so that's about 6 minutes from now. If you are joining online, you should be able to see a screen that says National TTAG Campaign. If you are just calling in, that's fine too. Until then, you can just hang out. I do recommend that you mute your phone so that we don't have to endure any unnecessary background noise that may occur on your end. But other than that, we'll get started here in about 4 to 5 minutes, or actually about 6 minutes. Just a heads up to everyone that's on the call. We're going to get started here in about 1 minute. As a reminder, you may want to mute your phone on your end because we are getting some background conversations that you may not want us to hear. Okay, we are going to go ahead and get started. We'll have some others joining us as we get started here, I know, and then we also have a number of individuals who are just going to be calling in and listening at a later time. So we're going to go ahead and get started so that we can use all of this time to hear fabulous presenters this afternoon. So thank you all for joining us. Just a couple of very quick housekeeping items before I send it over to our host for today. As a reminder, if you could please remember to mute your phones. That does make sure that everyone can hear and isn't causing any of us any unnecessary annoyances. So please take a moment right now and mute the phone for which you are on. And then if you have questions, of course, remember to unmute yourself. We will not be using the webcam feature for this. There are a couple of different methods of chatting. So if you have questions, if you look on your GoToWebinar control panel, there is an option, some drop-down arrows that say questions or chat. You can use either one of those functions to enter questions if you would rather not do them over the phone. So please feel free to use either one of those functions. The agenda for today is we'll introduction here, and then we'll have both of our presenters share their tips and advice. And then at the end of both of their presentations, we'll open it up to questions. And I would like to welcome now Mr. Isaiah Goyer from Arizona and Annalise Henderson, Virginia. They are TTAG ambassadors, and they are the hosts for today's webinar and have gone to great lengths to identify these two amazing teachers who are going to be sharing with us this afternoon tips and advice. And so for those of you that are going into the teaching profession in the next year or two, you're very lucky to have these two on your side and ready to share some things with you today. So I know we just had a couple of others join us, and so I just want to remind everyone again, please mute your phones on that end, and I will hand it over to you, Isaiah and Annalise.
Thanks, Ellen. So I'm Isaiah Gobea. I'm going to introduce Mrs. Bethany Pranger. Bethany grew up on a beef farm in Eugene, Missouri, before she attended Missouri State University, where she earned both her bachelor's and her master's degrees. After teaching a year at another high school in Missouri, she was able to return to her home high school in Eugene, where she has been 2 years. So I know she's got some great things for us to share with us today. And with that, Annalise, do you want to introduce John?
Yeah. Thanks, Isaiah. So I'm going to be introducing Mr. John Lockhart. He was a 2012-2013 intern from West Virginia Department of Education, Career Technical Education. He started his career at Mercer County Technical Educational Center, and from 2014 to the present day, he is actually the agricultural education teacher at Cameron High School right in near West Virginia. He's been a big role model for me, not only as a student teacher, but growing up in FSA as he served as a state officer. And he does a really good job working with his kids, and I'm very excited to see both not only what John has to say for us today, but also Bethany as well.
All right, so we can go ahead and get started. Bethany, are you with us?
I am with you.
All right, take it away.
Hello, everyone. Like Isaiah said, my name is Bethany Pringer, and I am currently in my third year of teaching. And first of all, I want to congratulate everyone to choosing what I think is the best career out there. It's been one of my highlights, and I enjoy going to work 99% of the time, like I like to tell my students. There are those one days where I do have my days where I'm like, oh, banquet's right around the corner, or things like that. I emailed Isaiah and Annalise both a handout that you guys will be getting, and just some things that I want you guys to remember as you're either teaching or going into your teaching career. Number one, remember you're a star. All those kids are looking up to you. You're that person that they can go to. You're that person that they want to be in your class. The next thing that helped me move through my first couple years of teaching is it's hard. Teaching is hard work. Being an ag teacher is hard work. And that is definitely a fact. But I like to tell my kids that you can turn the word hard into something positive. I like to tell them that the H stands for hardworking, the A stands for attitude, the R stands for resourceful, and the D stands for determination. And so, yes, it is hard. And, yes, there's going to be those times where you're going to struggle. And that's okay, because I know I did. And I know there's other first-year teachers out there that do. But if you turn hard into hardworking, attitude, resourceful, and determination, you can move past those hard times into something that you love to do every day. My next point I want to make is time management. Don't reinvent the wheel. There are resources out there. Number one, the Communities of Practice is a perfect place. And on the handout, I have a link that you can follow. It's Communities of Practice on the NAAE website. And that has helped me in numerous ways with my lesson plans, finding things through FSA, connecting with other people, and things like that. The next thing is I love clipboards. Clipboards are a great way to organize what your activities, your classroom, things like that. So I have several clipboards that I keep items on, whether it's my to-do list, whether it's my FFA contest, whether it's classwork, and it's real easy to just pick up that clipboard and go to your chapter meeting on Friday, or have a separate one for officers. So they're easy, they're organized, and it's easy to tell your officers, hey, go find that purple clipboard. That's always the one for FFA meeting. My next one is dress the part. So it's important that you act like you're the teacher. I know for me, I'm about 5 foot. I'm real short, and I look like one of my students. And so it's easy for me to blend in. And so I always try to look professional. Even if I'm out in the shop, I try to have a pair of shop khakis that I wear that are, you know, or I have a shop coat, but I make sure that they know who I am. They make sure that I look the part because I want them to be able to treat me like respect, and I make sure that I'm in that frame of mind. My next point is the small stuff matters. A lot of times people will say, oh, don't sweat the small stuff. But to me, building my program, I'm in a two-teacher department, and that small stuff is the important stuff. It's the stuff that draws in that community. It's the stuff that keeps the teachers in your school on your side. It's the things that make a difference to those kids. So thank you cards, handwritten thank you cards. The first day of school, we write a handwritten thank you card, and we keep those tucked away, and we hand those out throughout that first week of school to somebody that we want to thank during that first week of school, whether it be a student, a teacher, family member. We learn how to write those handwritten thank you cards, and we do that after everything, whether we have a speaker in class, whether we go on a field trip, whether, you know, just somebody nice came into our classroom or helped us out in the greenhouse. Handwritten thank you cards are a big deal in my classroom. I also have a birthday wall. I went to the teacher store in town, and I got a fun little, you know, January, February, the months, and I made little birthday cards, and I laminated them. And a fun fact is that if you write on lamination with Sharpie, and then it stays on there all year long, but then at the end of the year you color over it with Expo marker, it just wipes right off. So all of my kids have their birthdays on a birthday wall in my room. And when it's their birthday, I get a nice little happy birthday sheet, and it says, to student A from Mrs. Pringer. And they get a pick out of my candy bucket, and their picture goes on our Facebook page. And so it's a fun little thing that says, hey, you're important. And I'll do I have them in my plan book by month. And so I have an officer fill out all of them at the beginning of the year. And they are in there ready for me to go. So when I flip it over to the next week, I know exactly whose birthday is that week. I grab them out of class that day. I say, smile, take your picture. I put it on Facebook. Mom and Dad are excited to see it on Facebook. They think it's awesome. They got a piece of candy. And I realize they might crumple up that paper and throw it away after they walk out of my room. But to me, in that point in time, I made that student feel special by recognizing their birthday. I also do something called Positive Perks. And I print off my class roster. And my goal is to email a parent. Well, I divide my roster up into how many students I have, and so I divide it up into weeks. So if I'm going to email 4 parents a week or 10 parents a week, then I email those parents something positive about that student. And sometimes that really makes a big difference, because if you have those troublemakers, I normally recognize who those are, and I'm going to email them quicker in the semester just in case I have to make that parent contact about their misbehavior. But it shows that you're really keeping up with their child. You're watching them on a day-to-day basis. And so I have that roster in front of me on my table all day long. And whether it was last week, they did something good, I write it down. So when I'm ready to email that parent, I say, oh, real simple, you know, and it doesn't take that long. It maybe takes 5 minutes out of your day. But that makes a big difference when you ask that parent to help work that barbecue or work that FFA tractor pull. They're going to be more willing to help out your program if you have asked them, you know, told them something positive about their student and things like that. I have two more tips for you. One of them is practice saying no. And I know that can be really scary, but you want to do it polite, of course. But the power of no, it's a very essential thing to learn. You are only one person. There's only 24 hours in a day. Sometimes you have to sleep. It's essential. So you don't have to be in charge of, you know, the dance team or the technology committee or, you know, every little thing. You don't have to do an FFA event every week that everybody suggests that you should do. Is it a good idea? Yes. It's a great idea, probably. But our officers know that we're committed to doing one FFA event at least per month. And so at the beginning of the school year, we write out every month and what FFA event do we have that month? What are we going to be doing that month? So they can really see what me and my co-teacher are involved in doing. We're like, hey, guys, we have these commitments to do as ag teachers. And really showing them what we are doing, and versus just saying, no, we're not doing that, showing them why we're saying no, you know, why time management is so important, why, you know, we have to be able to say no because of the things that we're committed to. And my last thing is take time for you. You're the one that has to come to your job every day and love it. If you don't love it, it's going to show. Those kids are going to pick up on whether or not you're having a bad day, whether or not you don't enjoy being there, whether or not you may not really like that student that day or get along with them in that moment. And so you can't help others without helping yourself first. So it's important that you have a hobby. It's important that you go to the gym or, you know, go ride your horse or play with your puppy. My first year of teaching it was hard. I spent a lot of hours in the classroom and doing lesson planning. But I made sure every night that I went to the gym, or I made sure every night that I went outside. And so it's important that you take at least 30 minutes for yourself, whether it be you go do a craft or something. It's important that you take that time for you. And reach out to your other ag teachers. I have my email on the bottom of the handout that I sent. And so if you ever need anything, feel free to reach out to me. Questions, you know, just how did you do this? Happy to help somebody else. So those are my tips for surviving your first year of teaching or maybe even your third year of teaching. And so I like to take those into consideration even today.
Okay. Thank you, Bethany. Those are some really good tips that I even, like, kept aside and I shared with all my student teachers. John, are you on here?
I can hear you now, yeah. I'm still awesome. Not sure. The webinar viewer, I just see our, like, an image of the two of us, but...
Yeah, that's what it's going to show. But,
okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is John Lockhart, and you can go ahead and give your advice that you have for first-year teachers.
I think one of the first big things that I would say to anybody coming into the profession would be dream big, but don't be disappointed if you succeed small. Because your first couple years, you know, it's not a bad idea to have, you know, big audacious goals and to really want to conquer the world. But at the same time, there's so much in education that you don't get taught at the college level and that you don't realize are expectations of the job and things that take up large amounts of time that kind of get in front of the things that we're really here to do, you know, teaching, advising FFA chapters and training teams and working with SAEs and doing all those, you know, things that really motivate us and make us, you know, want to be ag teachers that are aside from the point, you know. When I think about, you know, my first year and what was my greatest struggle, well, my greatest struggle was learning all of the paperwork and then trying to balance that with the rest of my job and the things that I thought were really important. And you know, and that kind of time cuts into, you know, those goals and those things that you want to accomplish. So that's kind of like my, you know, words of wisdom there is, Don't be afraid to dream big, and don't be afraid to dream as big as you can, and try to, you know, accomplish those goals. But don't be extremely upset or, you know, so brokenhearted if you don't succeed at that level your first couple years. I think another big thing that I struggle with still, and you know, I think a lot of teachers struggle with is it's really, really hard to, you know, balance that because, you know, as ag teachers, we are so close with a lot of our students, especially, you know, everybody picks that handful of kids. Balancing that relationship of teacher versus friend. And I know a lot of young people in our state who have really, really struggled with that concept. You should never care whether they like you, but you should always care whether they respect you. And I think that's the two big things for me. You know, I struggled with that at first, and, you know, I see myself coming into that as I go into my fourth year of teaching.
Hey, John, let me just interject really quick. Can all of you that are on the call please take a minute and mute your phones? We're getting some unnecessary and annoying background noise from some of the callers. And so it would be good if you could turn that off so that we can make sure we can hear our speaker. Okay. Go ahead, John. Thank you.
That's my two big pieces of advice for people as they come into the profession, you know. And then I think my other thing is, you know, and I'm not sure how every county system works across the country and what's different. I know in our state we're supposed to be assigned mentors within our career and tech ed departments. But you should... even if you're not assigned a mentor, you should seek out a person, and it's got to be somebody in your building. You know, we've got a great program in West Virginia where we are mentored with other ag teachers across the state, and that works wonderfully for that aspect of the job. But you need to find someone in your building who is a master teacher, who is, you know, who is someone that you can speak to about problems that you have within your administrative system and within your county system, in your building that you can go to when you have problems, because that is such a great, such a great support system. If you can find a mentor within your building, even if they're not specifically assigned to you, and even if it's not, you know, official, but if you have a teacher that you can go to with those problems that you have, you know, that's a wonderful support system. And I'm lucky enough to have that here, and I know sometimes that'll take building a rapport with someone. But over a year's time, you should be able to make that happen, and you should really, really try to the best of your ability to find someone like that. And I know, and it's not like this for me here because I teach at a comprehensive high school, but when I was at the tech center, I felt very excluded because I was in my own building, and, you know, we had the ag lab, the greenhouse, and the classroom. And so I never left my area often, and I never build a rapport with the other teachers. And I can tell you I'm a much better teacher, and I'm a much better employee now that I have, you know, I'm here in Cameron now, and I know the other people in the building, and I have people that I can talk my frustrations with and through, you know. And that's definitely been beneficial, and I think that's something that every young teacher needs to strive to do.
Okay, well, thank you, John, for that advice. I know you've given me some of that advice through not only my student teaching, but because you talked to first-year teachers, and that's been really helpful, I know, to a lot of individuals. And like you said, our mentor program in West Virginia, it's really helped a lot of first-year teachers with not only getting used to their first year, but getting used to ag education in general.
Okay, now, do we have any, does anybody have any questions for either of our presenters? You know, they're here for a wealth of knowledge. They've taught a couple of years now. They know what that first year is like. So, is there anything you're wondering about, as you approach your first year of teaching that you'd like to ask either of our presenters? Feel free to either ask over the phone or in the comments on the GoToWebinar. Okay, well, I actually have a question then. What would you guys say was your biggest challenge within your first year of teaching?
Bethany, would you like to go first? Or?
Yes, I can go first. My biggest challenge within my first year of teaching is probably having to deal with mostly with, not necessarily respect from students, but just them seeing me as a figure that they do need to respect, as a female and a shorter student-looking, like, female. I really had to go into the classroom and command that presence. And so my dad always told me that it was easier to go softer than it was to be harder. And like John was saying in his remarks, about being in the profession and things like that. For me, I really cared about my students, but I showed that by showing them up front what my expectations were, not letting them get away with things, and making sure that they knew when I was very pleased with what they did, but also not very happy with the way they acted. And there have been times that you really have to stand your ground because they're going to push you. You know, they're high school kids. Think about what you did when you were in high school and or your friends did when you were in high school. And so you have those times where they're going to push you to see where your limit is. So when you go into that classroom, you really have to know what's acceptable to you and what's not acceptable to you. They know when they walk into my classroom that there are certain things that I don't accept that other teachers do in the building. And I never have let that slide, you know, every time I'm on it. And now the other kids correct them. I don't even have to say anything to them. And so for me, that was the biggest challenge, but that's also been the most rewarding because coming from that, they understand that, yes, I care about them, but I'm not their friend. I'm their teacher and I'm their mentor, and I'm going to help them and do everything I can to make them successful as long as they can also work with me.
I think my first... Well, my first year of teaching, the biggest challenge was, and you know, this is going to be dependent on where you're at and what the expectation is where you're working at first. You know, I walked into Mercer County, the first ag teacher that they'd had in that school system in 45 years. And so there was not like an FFA expectation. There was a classroom expectation, but there was really no push to have lab spaces or do those kind of things because they really didn't understand what a program was. So for me, the real big difficulty was teaching my administration what agricultural education is and the three circle model and having that laboratory experience. And so a big part of that for me was, you know, bringing those stakeholders on board and then being able to also get money and getting funds. And, you know, when you walk into a brand new program, that's definitely different than when you're walking into one that, you know, is already established and has that community support and has the facilities. So for me, my biggest challenge at first was creating a facility and creating an atmosphere where agricultural education was understood and supported. And so I really searched our state and even on a national level for grants. And so, you know, and I had to learn how to teach myself, basically, because there was no grant writing courses at WVU at the time, and I'm still not certain that there are, but I must have been successful at it because we got over $100,000 worth of grant money to build an ag sales facility and greenhouse there at the school with the ag building. So that was really my first greatest struggle and my first greatest success all in one fold, because it was, you know, definitely a problem, and it was something that I was very pragmatic about. And I took advice again from those mentors and other teachers that had already been through those things. And I coming into this, you know, the people in your state or your region that are good at writing grants. You know, the people that are good at training this certain kind of team. You know, everybody knows the people that are successful and what areas they're successful in. And don't ever be afraid to ask other teachers for help. That's not a sign of weakness. That is a sign that you actually have a desire to learn something as a teacher. And people will respect you for that. Don't ever be afraid to ask for help. And so, you know, my first biggest challenge was just developing a mindset where agricultural education was understood and respected and wanted. And I think we accomplished that. You know, by the end of the, going into the second year there, we had 90 students in the program, which was incredible. Not something that I ever dreamed was going to happen. And then, you know, we also got those labs and things built, which was really, really that's been the centerpiece of my success as a teacher thus far. So I think, and I think, again, your challenge is going to be, as a new teacher, is going to be dependent on where you go and what those expectations are and the, you know, the things that are challenging in that area. So that's going to kind of depend on you and your community and the kind of support that you have. But never be afraid to ask for help.
Okay. If we don't have any questions, I have one for Bethany and John. What class or skill, because I know we talked about a lot of skills that we need and some classes that first-year teachers may want to look at in order to become ag educators, but what class or skill do you two suggest for students to either take or gain in order to help them with that first career as an ag educator?
John, do you want to go first on this one?
I you know, we had a certain number of special education hours that we had to take for our certification, but I really wish that I had gotten more. you know, I took the, I think we had 12 required hours or 15 required hours, and I took the classes that fell into our program, but I wish I'd spent some of my elective hours in special education, because it is such a huge part of the job. And I have a class this year, and this is the first time I've ever encountered this, but I have a class this year where I have two students who are special needs, but they're gifted. And I can't, you know, because of the subject matter in the wildlife course, I have a real difficult time keeping them engaged at the level that they operate. And you know, I wish I'd learned a little bit more on how to teach to higher level students and how to teach to those gifted students and, you know, and meet their needs, because I think all too often we focus all of that learning, and, you know, And I, you know, I have a great time with our other, you know, special needs students, and it works fantastic for our program. But this is the first time I've ever encountered not being able to reach a kid because their level of thinking is so above the content and the subject matter. And it's just been a real struggle all year. And it's surprising, but in a good way. And it's a good challenge, but it's just not something that, you know, I wish we'd have talked more about that. And how to cater to those students as well, in those special education classes that I had, because there was very little about gifted students and meeting, you know, their educational needs.
I think that's a great point, and I totally agree with that. We see a lot of different types of students in our programs just because of the types of classes we offer and the hands-on aspect that we have. I'm going to kind of go in a different direction and not necessarily say maybe a class, but I think you should apply for as many experiences as you can. One of the things that I think that helped me in the classroom is being able to talk from firsthand experiences. And sometimes people think just because you're an ag education major that you don't qualify for the ag business internship, or you don't quite meet the recommendations or the requirements for, you know, the animal science internship. But you're teaching that to students. And how cool would it be is if you actually have pictures or a firsthand story of doing stuff. And so my suggestion or recommendation is to seek out experiences, internships, opportunities that puts you in a position to be able to learn things firsthand. So if you can really look at that and say, wow, I can bring this back to my classroom, your learning and your teaching is going to be so much better because of that.
I think those are both great pieces of advice, and thank you both for those. It looks like we do have a question from Matt on the GoToWebinar thing. He asks, what tips do you have for non-disruptive discipline?
Did he say non-disruptive?
Yes, not like, I guess, discipline that doesn't disrupt the flow of your class.
My biggest tip, and I think Bethany kind of already hit on this, is make your expectations known day one, which I think everybody does, but what we all struggle with and what we all kind of get lax on, especially, you know, this time of year, is keeping to those expectations. Because once you give them an inch, they're just going to keep taking, and it's never going to stop for you. And so if you have those norms, and if you go, and I know you hear this all the time, and it sounds like such drivel, but it's really not. If you have regular expectations every single day, you're not going to have those kind of problems. You know, that I'm not saying that on any given day any kid can come in and have a meltdown, and it can be your greatest kid. You know, it can be your star student. Everybody has a bad day, you know. So I'm not saying that it would never happen, but really the best way to prevent disruption in the classroom is to have expectations. And even more important is to stick to what you tell them. Because the first kid that you let get away with something, that's the last time you can ever have that expectation. And because they're all going to know it, and they're all going to take advantage of it. So I would say having those expectations set and then sticking with them.
I agree with John completely on that. And make sure that you can follow through with your, I don't want to call them threats, but your punishments. And it only takes, like he said, it only takes one. I've only had to, you know, have my class stop working and do an alternate assignment once. And then they, as soon as I say it, you know, the class pretty much, the students around them correct that student if they're having a disruptive moment. And so it really is sticking to your expectations. And I think sometimes it's reflecting on what you want out of your class and the students in that class. I know that in one of my classes, I'm going to have to give them a little bit more because of the personalities in that class. You know, if I push back on them really hard, they're just going to push back harder to me, and we're really not going to get anything done. Whereas if I let a few things slide off my back a little bit, but still stick to that expectation, and once they reach that point, you know, turn them back around, then we have a lot better class. And so it's getting to know your students. You know, are they having a bad day? Can you talk to them? Do you know what's going on in their lives? Things like that will help you have a lot less disruptive problems in your classroom.
What's one tool or resource you couldn't have survived without during your first year of teaching?
I can't think of any one singular thing. I mean, that's a difficult question for me. that's awful, but I can't think of one thing. I mean, I would have made it work. My first year, I taught in a computer lab for the first 9 months. So, you know, there's very little lab experience. We couldn't do dissections in that lab or do anything along those lines. And I taught, you know, all day. I taught Introduction to Ag because it was a brand new program. So, but I can't think of one singular thing that I just absolutely could not do without.
I think maybe not a material thing, but for me, it's attitude. If you walk in the mirror and say, man, today's going to really suck, your day is going to really suck because you decided that before you walked in the door.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You know, and that's my thing. I really try. You know, I see my kids for 52 minutes a day, and I may be the only happy person they see all day long. You know, we have kids that home lives aren't the best. And so for me, that was the one thing that I couldn't survive without, and I still could not survive without.
Okay, so reflecting back on your first year of teaching, maybe, you know, into the current, you know, your current position in teaching, what's been the busiest part, maybe, during your first year, what was the busiest part of teaching during that year?
I would say for me, it was a constant busy cycle. Whether it was you were trying to, you know, start the year off right and get everything ready, you know, going into, you know, your fall speaking, your fall events, FFA stuff, and then you're moving into your Christmas, where you take degrees, proficiencies. There wasn't a, you know, a time that I could pinpoint that was, this was my busiest time. It was more of just trying to stay on top of everything. And I think that if I could offer one piece of advice about being busy, is utilize your resources. My officers do a lot for me. My officers did a lot for me. Make the kids do what they're supposed to do. You know, make them be accountable. If they want their state degree, make them fill it out. You know, you can be on them, but really, really make that an effort. You know, if you're doing a barbecue, make the kids accountable. Pull in the parents. Pull in the community support. And so, pretty much the school year in Missouri is a busy time.
John, do you have a response for that one?
It's difficult to say because my first year would be so different than others, but I would definitely agree with what she's saying, and it's trying to keep from becoming overwhelmed with the expectation that first year, especially if you walk into an established program. It can be very, very difficult, but, you know, what I would say looking back, I wish rather than trying to tackle all those things that were expected of this program at the beginning, I wish I would have just catered more to my strengths and what my students needed rather than what had happened in the past. Because I, you know, as I came into my third year, which was my second year here at Cameron, that's what I did. I, you know, the first year I was so determined to get things back to where they were, you know, because we had a small space here where, you know, we had this great teacher who retired, had built this program from nothing and made it a really strong program, a really respected program throughout the state. And then we had a small period where we had some other teachers come through and there was a lot of turnover. And so things had fallen by the wayside. And so my first year, every bit of spare time was trying to get things back to where they were. And I can tell you, I burnt myself out. I burnt my good kids out. And we weren't successful at a lot of other things that we should have been because of every bit of spare time and extra effort and focus was on something else, you know, trying to get back to, you know, Camelot is what I say all the time when I'm talking to my friends and they, you know, get that reference. But this year I have focused more on what I'm really good at, what my kids need, and what my kids want to tackle. And I think that needs to be your focus. Never let, you know, what happened before. Never let, well, that's not how so-and-so did it, or that's not how, you know, Mr. whoever was before you, Mrs. whoever was before you. Never let that cloud what you're doing, okay? You tackle what you are good at, what you enjoy, and what your students need. And as long as that's okay with your administration and fits your content standards and things like that, ignore the rest of it. Because another thing I'll say, as an ag teacher, you're much like a coach, and no matter what you do, okay, I see 254 students a day, and no matter what you do, you are never going to make every single parent happy, okay? You could send each kid home with a bucket of gold, and you will have parents complain. And don't let that get you down either, because it's going to happen. You know, you're involved with too much, you're involved with too many kids, and eventually there are going to be people that don't like things that you're doing, especially if you're doing things that are different. So don't let that cloud your happiness, and don't let that cloud your success, and just do what's right for you and for your students, and as long as that's good with your administration, make that work, because you will really, really get beat down if you just try to keep up with the Joneses, I guess, is what I want to say.
Okay. Does anybody else have any more questions?
Well, I personally want to thank Bethany and John for their time today and for sharing their tips and advice with the next generation of agriculture teachers, and to everyone that joined in today and all those that will be listening in at another time. So just a quick couple of housekeeping things as we close things up here. All of our webinars are archived on the TeachAg website. This one will be up probably in the next 24 to 48 hours, so you can go back there. And then I'll also post Bethany's tips for success. She has a little one-page handout that kind of overviews what she shared today. As well as those of you that are on the call, you will also receive via email in the next 24 to 48 hours a certificate of attendance that you can put in your portfolio as you choose to. We will continue to have these options of professional development webinars because we know that the best way for everyone to be great teachers, both our current and future teachers, is for them to connect and share ideas. And so this is just one of the ways that we're doing that. Again, thank you to Ms. Pringer and to Mr. Lockhart, and of course to Isaiah and Annalise for coordinating today's webinar. Everybody have a wonderful evening and afternoon, and Bethany and John, enjoy the last month or so of school that you have. I hope that it's a good one.
All right,
thank you.